Welcome, dear listeners, to today's segment of Afternoon Satsang. We will be continuing where we left off last week with the Bhagavata Vahini. And it is such a beautiful time to be discussing the Bhagavata Vahini. Well, any time is a beautiful time, but this happening to be the week that precedes the most beautiful birthday of the year for all of us. The birthday of our most beloved Swami, when people all around the globe, possibly all around the solar system and the universe also, we don't know what sorts of beings exist in all these planes and places, but all their focus will turn toward Prashanta Nilayam Puttaparthi, where the birthday, the 92nd birthday, the 92nd year of advent of the Sri Satya Sai avatar is being celebrated. But that is in the physical plane, of course. The true birthday, as Swami himself puts it, is happening in the hearts of all the millions of lovers of God, where they have enshrined this beautiful form. And when we are able to build that Prashanti Nilayam, that abode of supreme peace and highest peace in our own hearts, that will be the true birthday that Bhagwan would love to celebrate, because Bhagwan says his birthday is the day when we are all happy, and we can all be happy only when we in union with God, because happiness is union with God. So the day Bhagwan takes birth in our hearts is his true birthday. And since this is the week that is leading up to that special day that has been earmarked to celebrate the advent of the avatar, I'm sure that joy, that specialness will seep into everything that we do, including this afternoon satsang as well. So in that way, this Bhagavata Vahini satsang is going to be special, and we shall be proceeding from where we left off last week. We begin by offering our humble pranams at the lotus feet of our beloved Swami, and I welcome Prem to join me as always. Sai Ram Prem.
Sai Ram Arvind, and as always, the birthday season is very, very special for us. And, even as you go through the Bhagavatam Vahini, or for that matter, any material which speaks about the avatar, you only realize what happens when an avatar comes in amidst the ability to progress in the spiritual path. First of all, knowledge of the existence of a spiritual path gets known to so many of us. I wonder if in the absence of Swami's presence in our lives, how many of us would have even turned to a spiritual path, even to take time off from our busy schedules and to think that there's something more than a mundane life, there's something more than just making ends meet. That itself is a great revelation for all of us. And Swami's promise that, as we always say, you want to know what is the best way to do things, you want to know what is the best approach to take to life. Who better to tell us than Swami? And, if you read some of these accounts of some of these devotees who were there in the early years of Swami's avatarhood in the 40s during the Parthamandiram days, one of the things they found when they came to Swami was it was so much out of what was expected from an ashram or from around a Swamiji. As, many of them would say, even in the later years, when we spoke to Ratanlal Aunty, she was saying that when she was told that we are going to go and see a Swamiji, she thought that she is going to see a bearded old man, 6 feet tall, with a huge pot. And, because she is used to seeing yogis from the Himalayas, used to come to her house when she was living in Karachi. And when she saw Swami, she said, "Oh my God, this is nothing that you expected." And when you start living with Swami again, it's all that so different. But as Swami would many times say, he gives us the essence of the essence, what needs to be done right now. Just like how the situation Parikshit is in, he needs a crash course. He has only 7 days and he's saying, what should I do? What should I hear? What should I keep my mind occupied with to ensure that at the end of 7 days, I can accomplish literally our situation, because, we have very, very less time to spare to God. I mean, not that we want to give only less, but even if we want to give more, I think we're not able to. Most of us are in such busy schedules. So Swami is here to give us really what can be done right now. You don't have to run away from your home. You don't have to go and find an ashram to go and sit in. But Swami gives us exactly what you can do. And one of the things is that, of course, is to keep your mind as much as possible occupied with Swami himself, in the form of his stories, in the form of his name, in the form of looking at his images and dedicating every action to yours. That itself is a Bhagavatam. We don't realize that we are being in the role of Parikshit without our knowledge. And that's really the speciality of, as you're saying, going through the Bhagavatam during this time, because it's so very significant.
See, last week we were talking about this concept of tapas. And tapas was one way defined as when you are able to focus and direct all your senses inwards rather than outwards. By nature, the senses crave things that will give them joy. And though it is said that we must direct them inwards, it is easier said than done. It is so difficult. Even now when you say we should direct our thoughts to God, we should direct our thoughts towards divinity or towards spirituality, it's easier said than done. That is where I feel the Bhagavatam comes in, where the beautiful form and the leelas of the avatar are present. The thing is, these are sweet and wonderful even to the senses. The eyes that behold that beautiful form of Swami, you know, as he comes, and there is something magical, because if we list out possibly the traits for prettiness, you know, the traits that make a person look pretty, possibly many of those traits Swami doesn't have. You know, he's not muscular, he's not well-muzzled, he's not very tall, he's none of that. Yet he's maddeningly beautiful. And for all of us who have known him, who have loved him, that is the most beautiful form ever. And it's not as if that beauty faded with age or time. You know, when we look at the photos of Balasai, of Swami as a teenager, we love that form. When we look of photographs and videos of Swami in the 50s, in the 60s, we love that form. Even Swami on the wheelchair when he's apparently incapacitated and, you know, he's being pushed on the wheelchair, we love that form also. So, you know, this is a kind of beauty that is eternal. It goes beyond the physical. It's just not prettiness. It is something that is much beyond, and that is why, irrespective of the life stage, irrespective of whatever, we still feel that this is the most beautiful form. You know, in the later years, as we said, Swami took on blows on his body one by one, one by one, one by one, because it is an avataric frame. It's not an ordinary frame. It definitely cannot go away like any other frame. Therefore, Swami took on God knows what. Only he alone knows what all he took on to his frame. And yet, you know, we would be thrilled by just the sight of that. You know, just so beautiful it was. And that is the reason why the Bhagavatam becomes very important when we think of controlling our senses or directing our senses inward. Because the senses are always seeking pleasure. And when we see the Bhagavatam, the story of the avatar, who says there is no pleasure in this? There is so much pleasure. So therefore, it becomes easy to just tell the senses that, you know, don't do this. Come here. Take this. Take this food. It's like, you know, I have a baby and she eats junk food. You don't want her to eat junk food. It's difficult to tell her, don't eat junk food. But if we are able to make nutritious food, which is as tasty, automatically she shifts and has it. That is what I feel the Bhagavatam does. It offers us nutrition. It offers us sustenance, which is as delightful as what our mind is hankering after in the outside world. That is why the Bhagavatam becomes so special, so beautiful, because of its beauty. And that is what, you know, now we are not yet reached that point, but when Shuka starts describing about the Rama avatar, that is exactly what he says. He says, Rama, Ramyate iti Rama, he that attracts, that is what is Rama. And he makes it very clear that it is not that Rama was the most handsome person in the world, the most beautiful, the most wonderful, the most well-built. It's not like that. But yet Rama was the most beautiful because it was a reflection of the inner beauty. And since God is the perfection, the epitome of inner beauty, it becomes so easy to relish, enjoy and find fulfillment in these stories.
Absolutely. It all, you know, comes down to the ability to love God. You know, that is what an avatar brings, and that is why that is what we're going to see, that when Shuka Maharshi speaks about the different incarnations, he speaks about, I mean, he refreshes our idea about the different forms that Lord comes in, Kurma avatar, the Matsya avatar and all of that. But he says that, you know, these are all appearances, and then he of course mentions, we're going to come to that part, he's going to mention other, what we refer to as Amsha avatars. or partial avatars of the Lord. But then eventually he comes to the presence of the complete avatar, the Purna avatar when he comes. That's when, you know, one is able to relate to God completely. When one is able to relate to him in a very, very personal level. And that's the beauty, you know, when you look at the ashram now around, because if you're going around now, you can see the very, very, you know, steep increase in the number of Westerners who probably don't even speak English. And every time you see that, it strikes you, you know, this is a Swami. And at the same time, you know, even as these Westerners you can see from different countries, you also see this huge group of tribals who have come from the interior parts of Andhra Pradesh. And they are people who have never even come to a city. And they are here, you can see them, they are all around the place, you know, they are doing their seva, they are going around visiting all the temples, they are sitting for bhajans. You know, the same Swami is able to attract the most rustic of tribals and the most sophisticated of people coming from very, very advanced countries. That itself speaks of what an avatar can do. You know, when we speak of all the other avatars, that's what we're going to see. We're going to see that in Krishna avatar. We're going to see that in Rama avatar. The appeal is universal. The attraction is universal.
It breaks across races, across countries, across all barriers. It is so universal. And it's a thrill to be, you know, I really feel very thrilled to be able to be in the heart of such a beautiful place, which is Prashanthi Nilayam, and actually see it with my own eyes, hear it with my own ears. It is such a thrill. And dear listeners, that is our idea here. We hope to transmit some of that thrill possibly through these satsangs. And next week, as we had promised, we will have a satsang on the birthday itself. It's a really rare occurrence that we are getting to do the afternoon satsang on the birthday, on the day of Advent. So we'll try to bring in more such stories and more such experiences. And now Prem was speaking about the different Amshavatars and different advents of the Lord. That is what Shuka tells Parikshit actually. He says that the Lord comes in different forms, and it is not possible nor is it good that we compare one on the other. He says every form has a purpose. Everything is made to perfection. The descent is perfect. There is nothing that can be done to further enhance that avatar. It is perfect in itself, but it has come in that form with those attributes in that manner. And it has, and the avatar does all that the avatar does because of Desha Kala Paristhiti, that particular time, that particular place, and that particular situation. So, in that sense, everything is perfect, but as you rightly said, we being humans, when the avatar comes in the human frame, and it leads the life like that of a human in the most ideal manner, that is when we get most attracted to, and that is what Shuka agrees also. And he says that's why you will find Rama and Krishna the most sought after avatars. But that doesn't mean that other avatars are not there. It also doesn't mean that any avatar is less or any avatar is greater. It is just that our personal preference, because of the form that we are in, that we love Rama and Krishna. In fact, last week I think we had stopped at the different traits, the different characteristics of a Purana. And out of the 10, we had explored 6. 6 of them. Just to quickly refresh our listeners. First is Sarga, which is elemental creation. That is the 5 elements with their 5 subtle attributes, the Tanmatras and the 5 Jnanendriyas along with the mind. These 16, these are the Sarga. Then the Visarga, which is a secondary creation. That is when these 16 interact with the 3 Gunas, the Sattva, Rajas, Tamas. They give rise to the secondary creation, which is Visarga. Then Sthana. Sthana, the different worlds, the 14 worlds, Patala to the Swarga, the highest, and Brahmaloka. And we described how these 14 worlds are not geographical locations, but different states of existence. Then Poshana, that is sustenance. Then Uti, or the creative impetus, that is the impetus for action and the consequences of action. And finally, we had also described Manvantara, which is time, which is a very important aspect of every Purana. Time scales are described there. So those are the 6 we had described. The next one actually comes about in the form of the description of the different forms of the Lord. Because the 7th attribute, or the 7th characteristic of every Mahapurana is that which is called as Ishanu Charita or Ishanu Katha. it directly, Isha means God, and Katha or Charita means the story. So, this is possibly a very vital aspect of every Purana, because that is what makes the Purana enjoyable to the mind and the senses. That is the stories of God.
Right, and this is the place where I think what we were telling till now about how one avatar cannot be compared to the other. The basis of any avatar is it's impossible for us to understand the reasons behind, first of all, the incarnation itself in its entirety and the different actions of the Lord. But among all the avatars, when Shuka says that it is more easy to relate to avatars such as Lord Rama and Krishna, I think that's where a little bit our mind can work. You know, when we come to Rama's avatar, which is going to be described in quite a bit of detail, we'll see there, the mind can relate to some of the actions and decisions taken by the avatar. There's a little bit of more logic in our level, right? I mean, there is always a supreme logic, but a logic which even our minds can understand. And that's why that avatar becomes more relatable. But you will always have, if you go through the story in detail, there are always points where we can debate about and say, why did Rama do this? Why did Krishna do this? So he is within, I think we had mentioned this even when we were talking about the Ramakatha Rasmayini, where he appears to be within the grasp of our reason, but then you suddenly find that you cannot explain some things at all. And that's when he actually grows beyond the grasp of your reason. And how many times we have seen that with Swami himself? He would make himself predictable to an extent. But then when you start predicting him, that's when, you know, he will put you in your place literally. Right?
You know, I used to think that when you say you just cannot predict anything about God, therein itself is a paradox. When you say that you can't predict anything about God, that is a prediction you're making, that God is unpredictable. So if this thing has to hold true, then God should also not be unpredictable. God should be predictable also. So, you know, it's such a paradox, and that's why I used to feel that there are times when you see that, yeah, he's predictable, this is what he'll do. And there are times where he has given many of us that joy. You know, I think Swami will do this and he'll do that. And we come out saying, see, I knew it, Swami would do that. But for every time we are able to say that, I knew it, Swami would do that, I'm sure there are 8-9 times where we are totally, you know, taken by surprise, positively or negatively, depending on our state of evolution, at what he does. So therefore, you know, when you say that God is unpredictable, there is a paradox there, we should remember. Because when you say God is unpredictable, you are making a prediction about God, that he is unpredictable. And let us be sure that even that will be broken, that prediction also will be broken, because God will appear predictable at times. That's why, as you rightly said, he is not understandable at the level of the mind and senses. I don't know if he is understandable even beyond that level. But the thing about Bhagavatam is that, don't try to understand, just enjoy. And the Ishanu Charita, or the Ishanu Katha, the stories of God that is embedded in the Puranas, is meant only for that. It is meant so that we learn a few lessons from there and enjoy the Leelas of the Lord, not subjected to a logical treatment and analysis, because such an analysis will only lead to paralysis and will not help at all. On the other hand, if we just accept and enjoy, we'll enjoy, we'll also learn, and we can benefit. So that is the seventh attribute or characteristic of every Purana, which is Ishanu Charita or Ishanu Katha.
The eighth one is referred to as Nirodha, or the conclusion of the whole play, or how the whole thing is absorbed into the Lord. Again, going back to what all of these characteristics are about, they're about a Purana, about a work which describes an avatar or a set of avatars. So what Shuka is saying is it should contain all of this, just like how it speaks about the beginning of creation in some detail. Some Puranas speak of it in much detail. Some of them give a very superficial description of it. But it should have a description, and similarly there should be a description of how the pralaya or the end of the whole creation happens. So he's saying that comes from Nirodha. And the other way of looking at it is, I think in one of Swami's Vahinis, Sandeha Nivarani or Prashnottara Vahini, Swami speaks about the Mahabharata. And he says, you know, how the Kauravas and the Pandavas fight. And then Swami makes a very beautiful point. He says, but do you realize that even the Pandavas perish in the end? So he says that is the whole play. There should be a battle between the good and the evil. The good wins over the evil, but the good also withdraws itself. Because the story is not complete unless until that point where all attributes are transcended. Not only the evil ones, the good has to be established and even the good has to be transcended. As Swami would often say, even Sattva Guna is nothing but a golden chain. It might be better off than the copper and the iron chains which are Tamo and Rajas, but still it's a chain and it has to be transcended.
Yes, it begins from nothing. And it has to finish in nothing. And so beautifully, Swami writes that the Lord absorbs within Himself all the glory that He Himself has made manifest. So, that is the eighth aspect, Nirodha. What is interesting is the ninth aspect is also similar to this. It's called Mukti. So, a very beautiful distinction is made. When this whole play happens, when this whole cosmic drama happens, those that are able to realize that this is a cosmic drama and hold on to that which is permanent, they don't get affected by this destruction. Because what is being destroyed? Once you are able to identify with that eternal principle, that atmic principle, that one God who has created everything, you know, once you realize yourself as the person who is seeing the dream and not as one of the characters in the dream, then irrespective of what happens in the dream, you are not bothered, you are not touched at all. So, if you are able to realize that through karma, bhakti or jnana, or all of the paths combined in a way, when you are able to realize that, then you don't actually get destroyed. Nobody actually gets destroyed, but you are aware that you are not destroyed. And that state, therefore, is different from that of pralaya. This is called mukti, because you are not destroyed, you are freed. But if you are not able to overcome the ignorance, you feel yourself as part of the universe, then when you associate and identify yourself with the universe, you are naturally destroyed when the universe is destroyed. And therefore, depending on how we have led our lives, depending on how the people in the Puranas have led their lives, they end up either in Nirodha or Pralaya, or they end up with Mukti. So, Mukti is the ninth characteristic of every Purana.
Right, and what that really means is, every Purana also speaks of one of the paths of Mukti, one of the ways by which Mukti can be attained. Not necessarily one, but even multiple. Because there are different stories, even if you look at Ramayana and that of Lord Krishna's life, there will be many stories of how devotees attain mukti in different ways. It's not necessarily only through tapas or only through one particular form of worship. And that is the idea behind dwelling into these Puranas, where you learn some of these most important lessons. But Swami says that there is the tenth quality, and that is the most important of all the others, compared to all the others, and that is what is referred to as ashraya. Ashraya as a word means one who is a refuge, a support of the other.
Help, prop. Right?
Somebody on whom you can rest upon. That is the meaning of the word ashraya. And as the name itself suggests, it's about how different devotees lead their life taking support on the Lord and His words. And you know that all Bhagavatam, all Puranas are replete with stories of such devotees.
So, these are the 10 different characteristics of the Puranas. And definitely the Bhagavata Purana also has all these characteristics. And this is what Shuka describes to Parikshit. When we look at it, what it basically means is that one's life must be centered around God. The outlook must be spiritual, because that alone will take us towards mukti. Taking ashraya of the Lord, we interact with all these elements, sarga, visarga, poshana, uti, manvantara, all of these are different characteristics that we face in our life too. As Swami said, the most important is ashraya. And how lucky we are that we have got the ashraya of the Avatara Purusha Himself. Getting that ashraya, we decide whether we choose whether we are headed towards Nirodha or we are headed towards Mukti. And for that, we definitely need a spiritual orientation. At this point in time, dear listeners, we will take a little break and we'll play out this beautiful song that was sung live in Sai Kulwant Hall by a great, wonderful, accomplished bhajan singer who goes by the name Sri Anup Jalota. And the song is very philosophical for those of us who understand Hindi, because he speaks about how one's life must be entirely focused on spirituality and God alone, because nothing else is going to matter in the end. And instead of referring to God as God, he refers to God as Rama. And so it would be an apt song for us to hear at the conclusion of the characteristics of the Puranas, because the focus is about spirituality. It would also be an apt introduction to what we are going to speak after the song, because that is about the Rama Avatar. So dear listeners, enjoy this beautiful, energy-filled, vibrant, pulsating song for the next 5-6 minutes, after which we will be back to continue with our satsang.
Rema pada nida mari gari nida re sa ma pada ni pada ni pada mari da mari राम नाम की लूट है राम नाम की लूट है लूट सके तो लूट अंतकाल पछताएगा जब प्राण जाएंगे छूट तेरे मन में राम तन में राम राम सुमिर ले ध्यान लगा ले छोड़ जगत के काम रे बोलो राम बोलो राम बोलो राम 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 बोलो राम बोलो राम बोलो राम 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 तेरे मन में राम तन में राम रोम रोम में राम रे राम सुमिर ले ध्यान लगा ले छोड़ जगत के काम रे बोलो राम बोलो राम बोलो राम 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 बोलो राम बोलो राम बोलो राम 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 इस भजन में प्रत्येक पंक्ति में एक सुंदर शिक्षा है, उसकी ओर ध्यान दीजिएगा। माया में तू उलझा उलझा दर दर धूल उड़ाए माया में तू उलझा उलझा दर दर धूल उड़ाए अब क्यों करता मन भारी जब माया साथ छुड़ाए अब क्यों करता मन भारी जब माया साथ छुड़ाए दिन तो बीता दौड़ धूप में ढल जाए ना शाम रे बोलो राम बोलो राम बोलो राम 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 बोलो राम बोलो राम बोलो राम 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 तेरे मन में राम तन में राम रोम रोम में राम रे राम सुमिल ध्यान लगा ले छोड़ जगत के काम रे बोलो राम बोलो राम बोलो राम 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 बोलो राम बोलो राम बोलो राम राम राम
तन के भीतर पांच लुटेरे डाल रहे हैं डेरा, तन के भीतर पांच लुटेरे डाल रहे हैं डेरा। ये कौन है पांच लुटेरे जो दिन रात हम सबको लूटा करते हैं, और इन पांचों लुटेरों को हम खूब खिलाते पिलाते रहते हैं, इनकी सेवा करते रहते हैं और ये हमको लूटते रहते हैं। तो इन्हें पहचानिए, इनसे दूर रहिए, नहीं तो सब लूट के ले जाएंगे। तन के भीतर पांच लुटेरे डाल रहे हैं डेरा, काम क्रोध मद लोभ मोह ने तुझको कैसा घेरा, काम क्रोध मद लोभ मोह ने तुझको कैसा घेरा, भूल गया तू राम रटन भूला पूजा का काम रे। बोलो राम बोलो राम बोलो राम 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 बोलो राम बोलो राम बोलो राम राम राम, तेरे मन में राम तन में राम रोम रोम में राम रे, राम सुमिर ले ध्यान लगा ले छोड़ जगत के काम रे। बोलो राम बोलो राम बोलो राम 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 बोलो राम बोलो राम बोलो राम राम राम। अंतिम पंक्तियां हैं, और हमारे आपके जीवन में, सबके जीवन में, बचपन से लेके बुढ़ापे तक जो होता है, जो गुजरता है, वो इन चार पंक्तियों में उतार दिया गया। बचपन बीता खेल खेल में भरी जवानी सोया, बचपन बीता खेल खेल में भरी जवानी सोया, भरी जवानी सोया, भरी जवानी सोया। सो
रे दानी दा रे नी दा बानी बाबा नी दा रे दानी दा नी रे दे 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 रे रे मावा रे वा रे जान दा रे दानी दा बानी बाबा नी दा रे नी दा नी।
संतूर पर रोहन खत्री संगत कर रहे हैं, अब इनका कमाल देखेगा। मैं जो सरगम गाऊंगा ये आपको संतूर पे बजा के सुनाएंगे।
सरेगा 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 सर सरेगा मुझे सरेगा मुझे सरेगा मा पापा मुझे सरेगा मा दादा मुझे सरेगा मा बाबा मा मा पानी दर पवनी दर पवनी दर पवनी दर सरे मरे मस पमरे मर धब मरे मस सदर रे मम पप मम रे रे सत सदर रे मम धद मम रे रे सत धा धा बब बब मम मम रे रे sare mama re 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 देख बुढ़ापा अब तो सोचे क्या पाया क्या खोया, देख बुढ़ापा अब तो सोचे क्या पाया क्या खोया,
देर नहीं है अब भी बंदे ले ले उसका नाम रे बोलो राम बोलो राम 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 बोलो राम बोलो राम बोलो राम राम तेरे मन में राम तन में राम रोम रोम में राम रे राम सुमिर ले ध्यान लगा ले थोड़े जगत के काम रे बोलो राम बोलो राम बोलो राम 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 बोलो राम बोलो राम बोलो राम 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 बोलो राम बोलो राम बोलो राम राम राम
Welcome back, dear listeners. That was such a motivational, beautiful song, and it really helps to listen to it every now and then. One of the stanzas there go saying that you spend all your childhood in games and fun, and then you spend your youthful energies and, you know, your adult life in trying to earn things in this world. Now that old age comes, now at least will you think on what is permanent. And at that point in time, so beautifully the song goes, if you think that it is too late now, don't worry, it is not too late even now, because the power, the grace, the glory, the beauty of the name of the Lord is such that it doesn't depend on the age or any other factor. Even now it's not too late, you can start taking God's name. Now I'm reminded of a very modern kind of analogy somebody gave with regards to taking God's name. Mm-hmm. Just imagine that you were in some kind of a ignorant bliss for the last 25 years and you have no idea about internet. And you know, 20 years back how primitive the internet was, and today the internet has just exploded, you know. Every other place there is the internet. And now when you wake up and you come and you know, you hear about the internet, you're like, oh my God, what is the internet? People might laugh at you and say, you don't know what is internet. Oh my God, you know, you have missed so much. It is true, you have missed so much. But even now, it's not late. Even now, you can go online and start getting the benefits of the internet, even though you have missed it out for the last 20 years. That is how the internet is. That is how the internet also is, if not more than that. We might have missed out because of our ignorance, but it doesn't mean that the lost years make everything lost for me. I can start reaping the benefits of knowing it even now. Just like I can get benefit from the internet, I can get it even from the internet. And that is what the song amplified, saying that even now it's not so late. And that's why it's such so encouraging, it's so thrilling, because it is never too late to turn to God. But it's always advantageous to turn to God as early as possible. So there is the early bird benefit, and there is nothing like a late bird loss also. It's a win-win-win situation always with God. And it's so encouraging, so motivating, so positive. That's why when that is amplified and told in the song, it thrills the heart.
And of course, when you listen to Anup Jalota's songs or any such bhajans, it only takes you back to your hostel days when we used to start the day with this. You know, even before we attend the Suprabhatam, they used to play these songs out for us in the PA system. That was a very beautiful thing, you know, as you're saying, our day was supposed to be filled with activity. Our especially days in Vrindavan were like from one bell to the other. You're always running, you're always doing something. You're either in the ground, you're playing, or you're in the classes, or you're in your departments doing some extracurricular activities. A day which is going to be filled with such activity starts by remembering some of these things. You know, even when you listen to it now, I mean, it only takes you back in time to what impact it made when we were listening to these songs, you know, during those days. And that itself is such a beautiful practice when you start your day with thinking of the God's name. That's what apparently Swami would say, that you start your day thinking of God and you end your day thinking of God. Like that story, Chinnakatha with Swami says, the farmer who is able to think of God the first thing in the morning and the last thing before he goes to sleep, and during every opportunity he gets in between, His sadhana is supposed to be greater than the sadhana of somebody like Narada, who is able to chant the name throughout the day. And, you know, that is the beauty of the name itself. And probably if that is the introduction, let's go to the next part where Parikshit is given this beautiful summary of the two avatars which are considered to be the standout when talking about the Bhagavatam. Shuka Maharshi chooses to highlight these two. As he says, he speaks about, probably we've not gone much into that, where he speaks about the different Amshavatars. He names a lot of people. He talks about sages like Kapila. He talks about the other Manu, of course, we have mentioned. And he names a lot of these people. Vyasa himself, he talks of as an avatar. And when talking about them, he says, you know, these are Amshavatars, which are plenty. You cannot identify them. Sometimes you don't even recognize their presence in your midst. And he speaks of their role as one of spreading peace and wisdom. And he says that like that, there are plenty. But these are not avatars where you can relate to completely. They're not avatars where probably listening to their stories is not going to be considered as Bhagavatam, as much as listening to the stories of Lord Rama and Krishna, for that matter, listening to stories of Swami. And that is why he goes on to speak about these avatars. He says, one of the things which he tells initially is that one avatar cannot be compared to the other, even whether they are Purna avatar or Amsha avatar. But it is more beneficial to dwell on the life of these two avatars.
And that's very understandable, Prem, because there are two aspects. Swami would always emphasize on this in his discourses also, the positive and the negative. And Swami would say, God's grace is the negative, God's grace is the positive, your effort is the negative. Not positive and negative in terms of something being good and something being bad, but positive and negative in terms of, like, in an electric current that you have two ends.
Right.
It is the two opposite ends, you know. You can call it A and B terminal if you want. If you don't want to, you know, say that this is positive and my effort is negative, it's not like that. It's just the two opposite ends which need to come together for the electricity to flow. So also, when we speak about the Bhagavatam and what it arouses in the listener, it has two aspects to it. One is the glories of the Lord, that is the Ishanu Charita, and the other is your feeling towards it. And so when Shuka says that all the avatars cannot be compared, they're all equal, it's because all of them are positive. But some of them, you know, arouse in us some kind of love, feeling and awe. And therefore, you know, their stories from their birth, their childhood, their growth, everything amazes us. It's relatable in a modern context. For example, if there's a football team, and in that team, you know, irrespective of who scores the goal, it affects the result in the same manner. You know, if it's a 2-0 victory for one country or the other, it is 2-0. That's it. Doesn't. But, you know, for the fans out there, there is a star player. There is a person whom they have a lot of feelings for, affection for, or, you know, they are fans of that person. So, even though a 2-0 scoreline in terms of net effect and result means the same thing, it makes a huge difference for me as a fan if those two goals were scored by my superstar. And that 2-0 victory for me is much more precious than an otherwise 2-0 victory. In cricket also, when you hit the ball out of the stadium, it's 6 runs. It doesn't depend on who hits it. But if it is hit by my star, my idol, I feel that sixer is more valuable, though practically it's not more valuable than any other sixer. And that is because of the feelings that I nourish and I have. The same way, while all the sixers are same, some sixers are more special. While all goals are same, some goals are more special because of the feelings that I in the audience have. That is the difference, I think, that Shuka is making when he says that we go to Rama and Krishna, because we associate, we have these feelings of awe and love towards these avatars, and therefore it is more impactful on us. Otherwise, all the avatars are the same.
And the other point which he makes, especially about the Rama avatar, is, you know, the ability to follow the avatar from the stage of childhood till the later years and to see example in each one of those stages. The other avatars, probably you cannot relate to them that way. In fact, even if you take an avatar like Vamana avatar,
there was no birth.
Right, we don't know what happens before the time where he comes and meets Mahabali. Or if you take Narasimha avatar, you don't know beyond that period of time. You know,
before and after, we have no idea, yes.
To be able to relate to an avatar, to be able to make that personality an idol for you, you need to know that, you know, what does he do in different situations. And that can be easily discerned in the case of Ramayana or in the case of Krishna, where Krishna, you see him handling different situations. either he is doing it himself or he is counseling somebody how to do it. And that is why it is so relatable. And Rama Avatar, of course, you know, he speaks of how it is, the avatar itself is defined like that. And the story goes like that. I mean, probably at this point you should say footnote, go back to the 2 years of Ramkatha Raswami satsang that we've done, because we've spoken extensively about that, and Swami has covered the different angles in which this one avatar can be seen. The basis of the avatar itself is, as we had spoken on that occasion, where Valmiki is wondering, can there be a perfect human being? You know, because he knows that that is the when you talk of Puranas, we said that Puranas are the essence of the Vedas. The Vedas and Vedantas in a form of story is called Puranas. And Swami would say, all Vedanta is about living in the present, doing the Dharma in the present. So you're talking about a life which is from start to finish, at every point, at every situation, at every turn in life, doing the right thing all the time. So Valmiki is wondering, can there be a person like that, who's so perfect, who does not deter from the path even for a moment? Can there be a perfect human being? And as a reply to that is actually the Ramavatar, where you can look at every aspect of that life and say, yes, this is how you need to be. This is how you need to carry yourself.
And their actions, their thoughts, the words are so impactful that even if we are unable to follow, just contemplating on what they did, they spoke, they thought, I mean, what Rama did, what Rama spoke, what Rama thought, is enough to inspire us to at least rise higher, slightly above the level that we are at, you know. So, if there is absolute dharma on the part of Rama, even if I am not able to follow that absolute dharma and I feel it's impossible, I may feel it's impractical, whatever, but I cannot deny the fact that just reading, listening and reliving that absolute dharma that Rama followed inspires me to be at least little dharmic. If what I would have done was at a minus 10 level, possibly I will do something at a minus 8 level because of the impact of Ramayana, because of the impact of what Rama has done. And that is how Rama lives on eternally. It, you know, many times we get this practical doubt because we feel that I may be good, but who is there to see the good? We don't have a faith in that dharma. This is what Swami had once told in a Trai session. Multiple times, but I remember two occasions. One was with an industrialist, other was with a person in the army. And they were coming up with situations where it becomes very difficult to follow dharma. And they said, Swami, what should we do at such times? For example, the army man said that if my superior is telling me to do something that is not dharmic, in army the dharma is I obey my superior blindly. That's how we are trained in the army. He says march, and we continue to march even if there's a precipice there. We fall down, but we don't stop marching. That's how we are trained. And so how can I, what should I do then? Swami said that no, you should counsel your superior. Tell him that what you're doing is adharmic. You should not do it. In a very loving, kind manner, you should tell. That's what Swami said. He said, Swami, I may do that, but if he chooses not to obey, then what? Swami said, you don't do it then. Don't do adharma. That is when he said, Swami, if I don't do that, then I might get thrown out. I'll be on the streets. I might even get court-martialed. Swami said, yeah, get court-martialed. You know, get thrown on the streets. Swami, if my wife, children all are on the streets, then what will happen to me, Swami? That is when Swami said, you seem to have a very low estimate of the power of dharma. You seem to lack faith in dharma. You seem to not have faith in the dictum which says dharma rakshati rakshita. If you protect dharma, dharma protects you. And what can be done then? You know, Swami left the discussion at that, but what we can infer from that is dharma is a very, very, very most powerful force in the universe, because as Swami says, it is based on satya. And in Rama's life, we get to see it, because this is a complete story. And who is there who can say that Rama was a failure? Who can say Rama was not successful? Even though he was deprived of his throne, even though, you know, he apparently languished in forests, even though he faced so many adversities, his wife was kidnapped, taken away from him, even after marriage for 14 years nearly, you know, he was not with, and not 14 years, but for several years he was not with his wife. You know, all kinds of things he faced. And yet he's successful, he's an ideal, he's a hero. And any kind of epithet that we give to any of our heroes, we offer it to Lord Sri Rama. So, in that sense, this story of Rama, it really reinforces in us our faith in dharma, because here is a person who never swerved from the path of dharma, and he never had to compromise or actually give up anything in life in the true sense.
Right. Just going back to that example of that army man, you know, from Swami's point of view, he must be wondering, you know, you're ready to give up your life for the country, but you're not ready to give up your life for dharma. You know, that is the amount of importance you're giving to dharma. And you know, Swami would often say this, you know, it starts with self-confidence, it then goes to self-satisfaction, and then self-sacrifice. I think that is what is the adherence to dharma which you saw in Lord Rama. That confidence that this is the right thing to do and I'm doing it. And when you say self-satisfaction, it is the dharma being self-contained in itself. You know, whenever you talk about the human values, the reason why Satya, Dharma, Shanti, Prema are held up high is you can pursue each one of them for their own sake. Like, you know, if you are pursuing a pleasure, if you're pursuing a career, there should be something behind it. I'm doing this for this reason. I'm doing this for this purpose. But these are human values. They're called human values because you can pursue them for their own purpose. Truth for truth's sake, love for love's sake, dharma for dharma's sake. And that is what, you know, Lord Rama stands for. He's pursuing dharma because that has to be done. It's not that what am I going to get from this, but it has to be done. It is self-sufficient unto itself.
And when pursued in that way, in that manner, dharma for dharma's sake, we observe that an incredible, amazing side effect is that the other values are also automatically adhered to. When I follow dharma for dharma's sake, automatically I follow satya, shanti and prema.
Right, exactly. As Swami would say, they are like the different faces of the same diamond. And when that self-confidence is there, Swami says, self-sacrifice, I mean, it becomes spontaneous. It becomes your nature, as we have seen in, you know, Rama's nature. I mean, there is no point where he says, oh God, I'm losing this, I'm not having this, I'm losing out on this. That self-sacrifice comes only with self-satisfaction. You know, you can only give when you are satisfied, when you are full yourself, and not full in the sense of attainments. It's full in the sense of whatever I have.
Contentment.
Contentment is what it is. And, you know, that is the whole thing. And that whole drama could not have been played out unless it was a life the way Rama led it, with all those sacrifices and difficulties.
And beginning the description of Rama, Shuka begins at the physical. He says, the dress that Rama wore, it was green and he would tie a yellow cloth across. I mean, this was so beautiful for me only to imagine, because I've seen only sketches and drawings and I never have imagined Lord Sri Rama in a green and gold and green and yellow dress. But that is how he was dressed. And Shuka begins describing the physical qualities with a kind of introduction. He says, let me describe the Saumya nature of Rama. Saumya meaning the sweet, tender nature of Lord Sri Rama. See, that is the thing. Lord Sri Rama is the most masculine, and yet, imagine Shuka is beginning to describe him as the most tender, the most delicate, the most sweet. I mean, these are all feminine adjectives, right? So, this is what I was referring to in the beginning. It's not like when you say Rama is the Uttama Purusha, the absolute man, the perfect man. It's not like he was like powerful, well-built, you know, having all the extremes of masculinity. It's not like that. Rama is a perfect man because inside he was perfect. And it is that inner beauty that exuded as the external beauty that everybody appreciated and fell in love with.
Exactly. And when he talks about this, starts with the physical description. He says that, you know, anybody who sees him would get attracted to him. Anybody who sees him would be drawn by his presence. And in that sense, he explains what is his nature. And then he goes on to say how he would carry himself within different relationships. And that again is the ideal which, you know, he's setting out.
You know, speaking of beauty, I remember when we were reading about the Ramayana in our Sanskrit class, it was mentioned that, see, usually a woman is attracted to a man who is handsome and a man is attracted to a woman who is pretty. So, it is not as if Lord Rama's physical appearance was such that it attracted all the women. There is a statement which says, Pumsam Mohana Rupa. Swami also mentions it in a discourse. Pumsam Mohana Rupa means a form that was attractive even to the men. So it is, that's why that statement itself shows that this is not simply handsomeness and prettiness. It is something that goes beyond, because it attracts all, irrespective of whether you're a woman or a man. So you can't say that, you know, it attracts only these people because this is the stage of life, this is an age of life. It's not like that. It would attract the children, the adults, the men, the women, everybody. In fact, later we'll see even the animals, because after all, his army was entirely comprised of animals. It was monkeys and bears and squirrels. There were vultures helping him, you know, all of that. So that was the kind of beauty. And describing further his physical characteristics, Shuka says that, you know, Rama would always walk with his head bent down. Though he was an epitome of self-confidence and supreme courage and bravery, he was also an epitome of modesty and humility. He would always walk by looking at the ground. But that was because his vision was always inward and not outwards. And then he gives a very beautiful example of how Rama would accept offerings. You know, Rama, like Swami would say, Swami would stretch out his hand and say, this hand has never stretched out to receive, it has always stretched out to give. That is what Rama embodied also. But at the same time, if somebody gives something, Rama did not want that person to feel bad that his offering has been rejected. And so beautifully Shuka describes how Rama with just the tip of his finger would accept, you know, possibly a sweet that is given, he would accept it and partake it, so that the person offering feels that, yes, Rama has accepted my offering, but at the same time, almost 99.99% of the offering remains back with him. You know, if we think of how, as different batches of students, we would try to gift Swami with something, and in the end, Swami would accept just the card that went along with the gift. I remember once there was a batch that tried to give a beautiful exotic Persian carpet to Bhagwan, and Swami accepted the card and said, I'm so happy, your love has reached me, I'm very happy. But he returned back the carpet, you know, which was the gift that had cost so much money. But at that time, nobody felt like Swami has refused our love, because the card that was made and with everybody's photographs and pictures, that was accepted. So that was how Lord Rama also was, you know. That is how Shuka describes him, saying that whenever somebody made an offering, he would just accept it, possibly the touch of a finger or a small bit of it, so that he is not accepting the whole thing. At the same time, the other person doesn't feel bad. So this is about his physical traits, and of course, So he goes on then to speak about the relationships that you were mentioning about.
Right. But of course, having spoken about the beauty, you know, you just can't, you can so much relate to it, because we've seen that in Swami, that being able to attract men and women equally, and not about a physical beauty, it's about a charm which, I mean, initially you described, doesn't fit into the descriptions of features which are good looking. You know, you often say that there are people who do all kinds of things to have a different kind of a nose, who lift their chin, and because you have set patterns of what is beauty. But in many ways, if you look at Swami's features that way, that you would find that actually they don't conform to those kind of ideas. But when you look at it wholesomely, there is a charm which you just cannot deny. There's one of the devotees whom we were speaking to, he came to Swami as an 8-year-old boy for the first time. You know, he comes with his aunt, and this was in the 60s. The only darshan he has is Swami coming on the balcony, and he's standing under a tree and he sees Swami. Apparently there was a time when it was heavy rain and there was no darshans. So that was the only darshan they had, and the next day they had to leave because there was no place to stay or anything. So this 8-year-old boy, you know, he comes back home and he says, I've seen God. He tells his mother. His mother saying, how are you saying? He said, no, nobody else can be so beautiful. He says he was so beautiful that he can be nothing but God, you know. And this is not one person. There's a story of Balapattabhi, which we have narrated many times. He comes, he does not like the idea of coming and seeing a Swamiji like this. He does not want to garland Swami, he does not want to touch Swami's feet. But he gets down from the bus and he looks at Swami, and he is like itching and waiting for the chance to go and garland Swami and fall at Swami's feet. And you know, that beauty we can really understand. In fact, once Swami was speaking about Lord Krishna, in one of the discourses during Krishna Janmashtami, Swami said, people usually draw Krishna in a little feminine manner. No, this was not Krishna Janmashtami. When Swami materialized that statue in
the sands of Dwarka, the golden statue.
Right, at that time, Swami had called the attention of the people there to features of that statue. And Swami had said, actually, Krishna was very masculine, But the charm was feminine. You know, he was not feminine as such. You know, he's always drawn as somebody who looks feminine. But he was actually masculine, but the charm was a mix of the masculinity and femininity. And that's what we've seen in Swami, you know. Once Swami rolls up his sleeve, you would feel that Swami is so handsome and masculine. But when he holds that robe in his hand and walks, as somebody said, you know, you spontaneously want to sing a Devi bhajan to Swami. And that's how he is.
It is very difficult, dear listeners, to describe the beauty of a Rama avatar without actually, you know, because every time when I'm reading Shuka's description of Rama, our mind and thoughts goes to Swami always. Speaking of relationships, Shuka says that Rama was not a son-in-law to his parents-in-law. He was a son to them. And he was a son not only to his in-laws, he was a son to every woman who was elder to him in age. And then he says he was like a brother to every woman who was younger than him in age. And those women who were of his age, he considered them as his stepmothers. So, you know, this is the way he interacted with people of the opposite gender. And that is how Shuka describes him. And one more description that Shuka says is that Rama always adhered to the truth. As it is said in Hindi, pran jaye par vachan na jaye. May my life go, but may I never give up on the plighted word. In fact, he later describes of how Rama felt that the plighted word was worth the sacrifice of even one's own life. And that's the reason why, in spite of everybody, the whole of Ayodhya crying and telling him not to do so, in order to honor the word that his father had indirectly conveyed, he decides to actually give up the throne and, you know, go to the forest for exile. So that adherence to truth and sticking to the word given, in fact, the Rama avatar is described by Eka Patni, Eka Bana, Eka Vachana, which means one arrow, one wife, and one word. And that is the reason, you know, when we were doing the Ramkatha Rasa Vahini, I found that most authentic. Because when we look at all the serials or even the depictions in different books, you don't see them being true to the fact of Eka Bana, one arrow. You see Rama shooting multiple arrows at different people. But when we read Ramkatha Rasa Vahini, very matter-of-fact manner Swami describes that. Rama took one arrow and then destroyed all of them. You know, for those of us who have grown accustomed to seeing Ramayana in different cartoons, in different serials, in different books and magazines and reading these stories, we feel that, Swami, you're, you know, the most thrilling part, the war, the fight that happens, you're finishing it off very soon. But Swami is mentioning it in a matter-of-fact manner because when we actually sit back and see, that is the truth that is said about Rama avatar. One arrow. It always has been one arrow. And I feel, other than Swami, no other author has remained true to this truth about the Rama avatar.
Right. Then he goes on to this description of another very, very beautiful quality of Lord Rama. And, you know, when you're talking about the Puranas, we spoke of the last aspect being Ashraya. And in the Rama avatar, he says, The word that Rama gave was, if anybody comes, whoever he or she may be, you know, he may be a sinner, he may be somebody who is very noble, maybe one who has done a lot of mistakes, as we were talking initially, who has taken a lot of wrong turns and come, and he says, oh, I've come late, I didn't know about it, I didn't know that this was wrong. Whoever it may be, the moment he comes and says, Lord, I am yours.
With sincerity in heart.
Sincerity, and he surrenders. Then Rama says, at that moment itself, I pardon all their mistakes and I accept them. I accept them as mine. And this is one of the words which Rama gives, and he says, we know that beautiful episode where Rama plays out this thing. Actually, there are multiple times when it happens, but that one classic episode where he plays out is when Vibhishana comes and takes refuge at his feet.
The brother of his enemy, actually. And in every sense, all the advisors that Rama has, they say that either he should be killed or at best imprisoned and kept away. So that why should one take a chance of him stealing their plans and giving it to the enemy? I think rather than we describe the scene, this entire scene has been depicted in Bhagwan's presence multiple times. One occasion was the convocation drama, November of 2005. 13 years before, almost 12 years before, and this scene was beautifully depicted, and Swami enjoyed watching it. We will play the audio of that scene where Vibhishana comes and surrenders to Rama and hear Rama's words, so that we better understand this trait of Lord Rama that Shuka is describing, the heart filled with compassion.
Lord, my pranams to you.
Greetings to you, my friend. What brings you here in such haste?
A Rakshasa by name Vibhishana has come to seek your succor. He is the brother of our enemy, Ravana.
What does he say?
He says that he has been humiliated and thrown out by his brother Ravana when he tried to advise him to retract from the sinful path and offer Mother Sita back to you.
Sugriva, let us consider the pros and cons carefully before we arrive at a decision. What is your opinion?
A Rakshasa must never be trusted. Most probably, this Vibhishana is sent by Ravana to spy on our forces. He may win your confidence first, and then will work for our downfall.
Angada, Lord, there is nothing in the three worlds that is not known to you. But as per your command, let me express my feelings. Vibhishana must be treated with suspicion. We must find out whether he really is sincere in what he says. Only then can we accept him into our camp. Hanuman.
Jai Shri Ram. My lord, Vibhishana is a great devotee of yours. His life is like a lotus that blossoms in slush. I saw Vibhishana when he spoke to Ravana against his decision to kill me. His face was calm and he did not appear to be deceptive in any way. My lord, he has openly renounced his brother and has come to you for refuge. In my humble opinion, we must accept him and his words to be genuine. Jai Shri Ram.
Lakshmana, what do you feel?
Brother, can there be any difference between your will and mine? I have no other thoughts. Your wish is my command.
I have made my decision in this matter. It is my vow that I shall not refuse succor to anyone who comes to me. Let it be anybody. Let him come and say once that I am yours, and I shall grant him freedom from fear once and for all.
Sakrideva prapannaya tavasmi iti cha uchyate abhayam sarvabhutebhyo dadami etat vratam mama.
Sugriva, today it is just Vibhishana. Even if Ravana comes, I shall grant him refuge too.
O Dharmamurti, I fail to fathom the depths of your compassion. Forgive me and allow me to bring Vibhishana to you.
Swami! Swami! Your servant surrenders at your feet, seeking refuge. I have come to you, leaving behind my wife, children, and everything in Lanka. I have none else but you. You are everything to me, O Rama. I surrender my joys, my sorrows, and my very life at your divine lotus feet.
None seeks my refuge in vain. Ravana's days are numbered. You are the king of Lanka. That is my sankalpa. I swear in the name of my three brothers that I will not return to Ayodhya unless I achieve this objective. I shall crown you right now as the king of Lanka.
Lord, what if Ravana seeks your refuge now?
If that be so, then I shall request Brother Bharata to crown him as the king of Ayodhya.
Welcome back, dear listeners. We were listening to that clip from a drama which was staged in Swami's presence in 2005. And the episode which was narrated, which was depicted, was what we were talking about, where Rama says that, you know, he takes the counsel of all the people about Vibhishana, and he says that, but he takes the opportunity to express this vow of his. He says, whoever it may be, the moment he comes and says, I surrender to him, you know, he accepts. In fact, in the Bhagavata Vaini, Shuka Maharshi, I think, narrates the other episode where some asuras who had taken the form of vanaras and who had infiltrated into the vanara army were captured, and they were brought to Rama's presence, and they want to, you know, give them the treatment which a spy deserves. But at that time, Rama says that, you know, they have probably in their hearts somewhere they would have had that being drawn towards Rama, and he says, no, they have come to take refuge in me, and I will not harm them in any way. And he actually, I think they become a part of his army, or they are allowed to go back. Something like that is in the story, I think.
No, they are also allowed to go back, and as far as I remember, and one story, one of them is also close to the doctor there, and that's why when Lakshmana falls unconscious, he is told, you go to Lanka and get Sushena from there. And why would he be friendly? That's because of all these things that Rama has done.
In fact, one of them go back and report to Ravana or Indrajit about, you know, how compassionate Rama is, and, you know, they should take the opportunity, and probably there they would have got killed, I guess. But, you know, that is the nature of, you know, Rama, and we've seen this. I mean, again, how can you talk about Rama or Krishna without talking about Swami? It's the same with every avatar, you know, that compassion is one thing which Swami would say. If you look at Swami's eyes, you would see that Swami's eyes were always moist, and Swami would speak of that as the tear which is ever present in Swami's eyes. Swami would use the word Karunya Bindu, and Swami says, I look at the world constantly through that tear of compassion. And Swami would say, that is the nature of an avatar, that's the nature of God. And we really, I mean, not just compassion, with so much pity Swami must have looked at us, that, you know, what a great opportunity you all have to be in my presence when we were not able to measure up to that opportunity. I'm sure it was not just compassion, but sympathy and pity too.
You know, the time in our studio is already 1:55. I would like to highlight just one more aspect that was seen in that drama. When the person is, when Vibhishana is brought, when the news of Vibhishana's presence is brought to Rama's notice, though ultimately it is Rama who takes the decision, it's amazing how Rama takes suggestions from everybody.
True.
Everybody, you know, it's not just the top people of his army. You know, he has Angada, he has Hanuman. Actually, Hanuman has no position in the army. Sugriva is the king there. He takes from Sugriva, he takes from Hanuman, he takes from Angada. Angada is a person whose father, Vali, has been killed by Rama. And Vali and Sugriva were like mortal enemies. But Rama takes even from Angada his advice, and this is something we would see even in, we have seen even in Swami. You know, whenever a decision has to be taken, finally the decision would be taken by Swami. And after taking the decision, Swami also in his own way would explain his rationale for why he took the decision. And there would be no questions asked after that. But at the same time, he would take suggestions from everyone, and suggestions would be very varied. In fact, that is how I think, you know, Swami kept peace in this place. Because, you know, having been part of the organization here, we saw how difficult it was with Swami's physical departure. Difficult in terms of decision making, decision taking. Of course, all the decisions that were taken from the trust side were all, you know, unanimous decisions. But definitely the time that was necessary to come to those decisions, arrive at those decisions, increased a lot. And that in itself, you know, showed what was the impact of the physical presence of the avatar. Because everyone, you know, would feel that Swami has heard them. And everyone would feel that what decision Swami has taken is the best. And though their decision was not fully implemented, or it was only partially implemented or not implemented at all, everyone would be satisfied. That is the kind of persona, the charm that Swami exuded in the physical frame. That is, I'm sure, is the thing that Rama, every avatar exudes even in the physical frame. That is what makes the physical frame of the avatar so special, which is irreplaceable by any other frame. And that is one aspect that I was reminded of even as we heard this drama, because Swami would always do that. And on that note, dear listeners, we will bring this satsang to a close. The next week, the next Thursday when we meet, will be the birthday of our dear Swami. We hope to once again fill ourselves and all of you with Bhagwan's love, with stories divine, and we look forward towards that satsang. Hope you have enjoyed this satsang. We will continue the Bhagavata Vahini a fortnight later, because the next fortnight, next week is Swami's birthday. After that, we'll have a general theme, after which we will come back to the Bhagavata Vahini. As always, you can write your feedback, your thoughts, your suggestions, anything at all to listener@radiosai.org. We have been receiving all your feedback mail. We know that some of you are very sincere and very detailed feedback you have been sending us. We are actually touched with a few of our listeners who you know, almost seem to make an entire summary of the entire satsang session that we are having here. It's wonderful that you're enjoying in this manner. We are also enjoying this. Praying to Swami that this kind of sweet joy goes on and on forever. We bring the satsang to a close. We'll play a bhajan, on the other side of which will be the segment Love to Love by Brother Chandu Vijay.
Lakshmana Sevita Dasharath Nandana Rama, Dasharath Nandana Rama, Raghuvara Janani Janaki Rama, Raghuvara Janani Janaki Rama.
Thank
Rama. Dasharatha Nandana Rama, Raghuvara Janani Janaki Rama, Raghuvara Janani Janaki Rama. Vaikuntha Rama,
Vaidehi Priya Vaikuntha Rama,
Ahalyodaraka Rama,
Ahalyodaraka Rama.
Lakshmana Se
Dasharatha Nandana
Rama,
Raghuvara Janani Janaki Rama,
Raghuvara Janani Janaki Rama.
Vaidehi Priya Vaikuntha Rama.